VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here live as always. There is just nothing to me that I would less rather listen to than reruns of radio or canned radio. It's so much more fun when we get to talk to you folks and you can actually talk back if you want to. And that part is real easy. Just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, 222-TALK. Welcome back to all the regulars. As always, we appreciate it. You're the base of our business, and we love you for it, and we will show up as long as you care to listen. New people, if you are accidentally or on purpose tuning in, stick around for the hour. You'll hear some stuff you like, I think. We always like to promise that you'll learn something, no matter how useful or useless it might be. You will learn something if you stick around for the hour. So don't be afraid to interrupt us when we get on something that you're not interested in, should that happen. All you do is pick up the phone and change our direction, because callers will always go right to the front of the line. Well, here we are in Christmas season, and things are dismal in the economy, and everybody's feeling so badly that they don't want to do anything, and they're just staying home and saving their pennies. Oh, wait, no, that was what I read on Yahoo News. That wasn't actually the truth.
Well, only one part of that is true.
Which part?
That they're staying home.
That's true.
To do online shopping.
And, you know, I heard a great description of it. I read a great description yesterday. They were talking about the old days when there were always the fights and when Walmart opened its door and all that. And they said now that's all happening at the website. And if you're trying to get on Costco.com yesterday, you'll know just exactly how true that was.
Yep. I was priced or not priced. I missed a deal. It went live at 10 o'clock and I was going to purchase something. And I logged on at 10:30 and it was gone. Wow. So there was no one to fight, but I would have.
Yeah.
Not really.
Well, we're going to get into a lot more of that, the numbers and how the press is treating it and all that. But first, a personal note. I wanted to say thank you to Adam and Jessica and family. They threw another fabulous Thanksgiving feast and had lots and lots of family there, and everybody seemed to get along fine. It was fantastic. Two different kinds of turkey and all the stuff that goes with it. And I will blame them for one thing, sort of. I'm still miserable from eating too much.
That is not my fault.
It must be, because if you served me stuff that wasn't that good, I wouldn't have eaten so much.
Yeah, it was a good time.
It really was, and what a day. I'd like to say that I was in charge of the weather, so we all succeeded in our own way. Anyway, I hope everybody had as good a time as we did. It was a wonderful event. It's dangerously close to Christmas. This was the shortest time between Thanksgiving and Christmas that's possible with the layout of the calendar. And I think it's going to sneak up on us really, really quickly this year. So as we were saying a couple minutes ago, the world seems to have gotten off to a bit of a head start because there isn't really all that much time to handle it. So despite the naysayers and the anti-Trumpers and the talk down the economy and the climate change fanatics and all the everything else that doesn't lend itself to a happy and joyous season, let's talk about the truth. Take it away.
Sure. Well, it was a short trading week. We had three full days and then a sort of half shortened day, I guess, on Friday. And it was a pretty good week, despite a triple-digit drop in the Dow on Friday. Yeah. It ended up pretty nice.
Monday through Wednesday, three indices, 3 days, three records each day.
Yep. And unbelievable. Then Friday pulled back a little bit, but the whole week was on low volume, as it always is. So we won't really see what the broader market or the the big traders are thinking probably until next week. The despite Friday's drop, the Dow ended up the week 0.6% higher, while the S&P gained 1% and the NASDAQ gained 1.7%. That brought the monthly total on the Dow to an increase of 3.7%, the S&P 3.4%, and the NASDAQ 4.5%. Those are the best numbers we've seen since June for a full month. The increase for the year is now over 20% on the Dow and over 30% on the NASDAQ. So it's
and
been
interestingly,
a really good
this
year.
Quarter, which includes October, which, as everybody knows, can be a little dangerous.
Sure.
That's looking excellent.
It is. It is. The NASDAQ's up over 8, the Dow over 5, and the S&P almost 7%. So it is looking like a nice
pretty
quarter.
Pretty spectacular end to a year if we can have a non-duplicative December.
So from all the reports, if you can find them, which was actually extremely difficult, Thanksgiving kicked off Black Friday in what has become an increasingly common trend. So what I mean by that is people are now shopping on Thanksgiving. And it used to be that families would leave the dinner table, go out shopping together around 6 p.m. on Thursday, which I think is pure insanity, but some people really like it.
Movies were big that afternoon, too.
That's true. But now that shopping has evolved even more into online shopping. So leave the dinner table, huddle around the computer, and spend some money. So shoppers spent more than $4.2 billion online on Thanksgiving this year. That's a 14.5% increase over last year. How much of that was fueled by wine or other liquor? We're not sure, but I'm sure some of it was. Yeah. I don't have any official data, but according to CNBC, at 9 a.m. on Black Friday, online sales were up more than 19% from last year.
Wow.
Yeah, on Black Friday, shoppers were expected to spend more than $7.5 billion online and more than $114 billion total. So,
a lot of money where I come from.
Yeah, that is a big day. I know I did my part on Black Friday morning. We sat on the couch and got our Christmas shopping done. It was great. And then my wife actually ventured out and shopped a few small business.
We'll talk more about that, too.
Today is Small Business Saturday. It's sort of the redheaded stepchild of Thanksgiving shopping week. Mm-hmm. And Sunday, which doesn't even have a fancy name, is actually about the same level of sales as Thanksgiving Day. Monday is another big day. It's called Cyber Monday. This trend has kind of been decreasing, though, the Cyber Monday thing, because it used to be that after Thanksgiving, you'd go into the office, and that was the only access you had to a computer. Now, everyone carries a computer, a shopping machine in their pocket. So the Cyber Monday thing, it's not really as big of a deal as it used to be. But still a good day to get some deals. So if you missed out, if you haven't been able to shop, wait till Monday. You should see a bunch of good deals there as well. For a short week, there was a ton of economic data, and much of it was good. My favorite was that the third quarter GDP was revised higher from 1.9% to 2.1% increase year over year.
Yeah, that was kind of quiet in the news, wasn't it?
I had to kind of dig to find it. The largest positive contribution to that was personal consumption, so people out shopping, and the largest drag was business investment. Another positive note was durable goods orders, which really bounced back in October. The estimate was for a decline of almost 1%, and instead we saw a gain of 0.6%. Prior month saw a decline of 1.2%, so this was a major shift to the positive.
Yeah, not bad.
No, not at all.
Well, I do have a trivia question for after the break. I almost hate to get into this topic because it's kind of a downer during the otherwise happy season, but we got to start thinking about taxes, people. You don't have much time to do what you're going to do, and got to cover it. So it will be a trivia question on taxes. And I know you've all been waiting out there with bated breath. This is the day of the big reveal. Coming up right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And a trivia question for the week, sponsored as always by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And you can call us at 904-222-8255. Speaking of taxes, we may not like it, but I think it's appropriate. Tomorrow starts the first day of the last month. The numbers are in for the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017. The first full year is done and has been filed and compiled by the IRS. It was the tax year 2018. What percentage of American families paid more taxes under the new tax law? They said 80-some percent of America would get a cut. What percent actually got their taxes increased? I know a couple.
Yeah, we had a handful, but yeah. it was few and far between.
And I'll take it to the nearest 1%. Okay. That part being, somebody's calling already. That's a good thing. We wanted to spend a minute just talking about the gloom and doom sayers. You'll see it now because of the messy political situation out there. There are people that I really, truly believe would rather knock this economy down than to give Trump a hand. Good morning, Paul.
Yes, 15% of families are paying higher taxes.
You're actually too high, as the numbers have settled in.
So, too high?
Yep. Now, okay. I'll explain a little more when somebody gets it right or at the end of the show. But
listen, today is the six-month anniversary. On June 1st of this year, I called both of you, and I told you that I had transferred my money to PIMCO Bonds. I got out of the market, put it in PIMCO Bonds, and I asked you, did I make the right move?
What a lovely time for you to call.
And you said, call us back in 6 months, and time has gone so quickly. And, gentlemen, here it is, 6 months later. Well, actually, one day short, tomorrow would be the correct six-month anniversary.
Well, since the market's not open tomorrow, there'll be no change. Are you ready? I've got the numbers. Yes. This is the big reveal. Did Paul do the right thing by getting out in December? Now, I'm just going to make a presumption here that you didn't get back in, and that this is for argument's sake. We'll talk about that when I get done. If you had gotten out at the highest point in December, that would have been the third, the S&P 500 since then is up 350.61 or 11.1%. Had you gotten out on the worst day, which was December 24th, the market is up 790 points or 25%. And if you had just hit the average of those two somewhere, it's up 570, which is 22.7%. So looking back on it, I am now willing to stick my neck out and answer, not a real good idea.
Well, that's exactly what I thought. And 6 weeks ago, I got out of PIMCO Bonds and put my money in Vanguard Wellington.
And how is it doing?
I'm actually making money. But, you know, with PIMCO, I never lost any money, but I never gained any money. It was
right.
Flat. It was flat for 5 months.
Yep.
So I moved to Vanguard in 1 month, I made $1,000.
Well, you know, it's very tempting to all of us, and some of us even made mistakes along the way doing that. Very tempting to go with your heart rather than your head. But if you really look at numbers over time, your head will win. The biggest problem with that is when people put money in the market and they don't have time to wait. If you don't have at least 5 years to wait, that money should never have been in the stock market. It is too risky. But if you've got 5 years or better, it always seems to treat us well. Now, the full disclosure here, I'm not saying that December won't be another bad one or that it'll be good or it'll be average. I have absolutely no idea, just like everybody else has absolutely no idea. But there are a lot of people trying to talk the market down. I just don't see any economic reason for that to take hold at this point. But you've been a real sport. I really appreciate your patience and your calling in a couple of times. And I guess I'd call it an admission. But no one could misunderstand how scared you were if they were in the market in December. It's just whether or not you act on it that actually matters.
Okay. I'll talk to you in another 6 months on May 1st then.
I will look forward to it, and I'll put it in my notes.
Okay.
Thank you so much. As I've said before when Paul called in, he is certainly a good-humored and generous guy. I appreciate him giving us time and the opportunity to talk about these things. So thank you.
What it really is a good lesson in why you should diversify, because those bond funds actually did great in January.
And, that's true.
And earlier in the year, and then they have been pretty flat over the more recent time period. But
so was the market, until a month or so ago.
But so, if you were in both over that whole time period, you would have taken advantage of the rise in both asset classes during different times.
And I almost hate to rub it in a little bit, but there is one more codicil, I guess, on that. Actually, the number I gave included it. The actual amount, if you'd gotten out at the midpoint in December, through today, the market's up 18.1% as measured by the S&P 500. But historically, 25% of the return of the S&P 500 is dividends, and the index does not include dividends. That's what takes it up to 22.7. So, you know, sitting in the S&P 500 can be very boring, but it can be very profitable.
I can tell you it's, not the S&P 500. It's actually the total market index is the largest holding in my portfolio.
Yeah.
So.
And it's been a good year for that. Someday, this market will have trouble again. Like I said, there's some people trying to talk it into a downturn. I don't think they're going to succeed, but every day we wake up, we have absolutely no idea what day it's going to be. The worst thing you can do is try to predict it. How many of you remember the name Peter Lynch? Probably, if you're 50 or older, you probably remember Peter Lynch. He was the absolutely incredible fund manager for Fidelity Magellan during the 80s, and that thing went up and up and up and up. He did what he called investing in things you know. So he would ask his wife when she got home from shopping, what did you see that you liked? And the biggest thing he did, she brought home pantyhose and an egg and said, this is really cool. They're great quality and the marketing is wonderful. It's a point of purchase kiosk. So he went to a bunch of stores and looked around and found out Hanes was making them. He loved the concept. And he went to talk to Hanes, and they were looking to expand huge because this thing was really taking off. So Peter Lynch invested the Fidelity Magellan money in buying them a new factory, for which he got paid back, and he got the returns into the fund, and he was just on fire. Here is one of my favorite quotes from Peter Lynch. Quote, far more money has been lost by investors preparing for corrections or trying to anticipate corrections than has ever been lost in the corrections themselves, end quote. Pretty smart guy, huh? Pretty rich guy.
Yep, and that investment philosophy is very similar to what Warren Buffett has done by looking at things that are so popular everyday names and maybe underpriced or not taking full advantage of their pricing
value
power.
Value investing, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah, so people love to quote Warren Buffett because he says if you're in the market, you have to be prepared for a 50% loss. It has happened. It'll probably happen again. But then they don't quote his follow-up to that. What do you do when that happens? Absolutely nothing. You look for bargains and buy more. That's it. So it's pretty important to do the Paul Harvey on that one and look at the rest of the story. Well, what have you found that is ridiculous in the way of people trying to talk us into bad times here?
Well, my favorite one was from Market Watch this week, and this came out on the 28th. It says, fears of economic recession could derail the holiday shopping season. But then, if you read the article, it goes on to tell you how good the holiday shopping season has been already. And in fact, online shoppers have already spent $50.1 billion between November 1st and November 26th, which is up 15% year over year. And there's been 7 days that have surpassed $2 billion in sales. And so, yeah, it's... The whole article is contradicting the headline. It just doesn't make any sense.
I've got a few of those examples in here. The naysayers will do anything to try to make a point, and since their point is wrong, all of their support for it is wrong.
The National Retail Federation expect overall sales growth in the 4% range, despite uncertainty and unease about the news from Washington, D.C. Because I know... that what happens in Congress is definitely going to really make a major shift in how much I spend on my kids this year for Christmas.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, wait.
It's so ridiculous.
And perhaps more importantly, is my job secure?
Right.
Do I have a job?
Right.
Am I making more money? Oh, those things might weigh very heavily on me. And then not these people.
The other one I saw tried to tie people being afraid about the tariffs.
Yeah.
I mean,
the tariffs impact 3.1% of our imports.
And then if you go out and shop and you see something is priced more than you want to spend, you don't buy it. You buy the next best thing. I mean, it's just
ridiculous. That would result in buying American, you get a twofer. The way I see it, put somebody else to work. All right, we're going to have more of this nonsense when we come back in a few seconds. Don't go anywhere. This is the post-Thanksgiving Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And the trivia question is still out there. After the first full year following the Tax Cut Act, what percentage of Americans paid more in taxes than they did prior to the tax reduction? And we know that it's between 0 and 15. So you got a nice bracket and plus or minus 1 all the way. I had a quick little thing that my erudite research department came up with this morning, kind of a futuristic look at the telephone. It's out of Pasadena. The telephone of the future, Mark Sullivan, San Francisco, he was a president and director of a phone company, said in an address on a Thursday night, just what form the future telephone will take is, of course, pure speculation. Here's my prophecy. In its final development, the telephone will be carried about by the individual, perhaps as we carry a watch today. It probably will require no dial or equivalent, and I think the users will be able to see each other if they want as they talk. Who knows but what it may actually translate from one language to another. This was published in the Tacoma News Tribune on April 11th, 1953.
Pretty amazing.
Not a bad look forward, was it?
No.
I was 3 years old. Wow. No, not quite. I was actually 2 years old. That was pretty neat, I thought. One quick one from the government should run our entire healthcare system, page. Feds paid $1 billion in Social Security benefits to individuals without a Social Security number last year.
Now, is there a reason behind that, or how did that happen?
They just didn't need one, I guess.
But is there some kind of benefit you can get without needing a number?
Well, let's see. The agency paid $1 billion to 22,426 representative payers who did not have a Social Security number. And SSA had not followed its policy to retain the paper application. So they applied in paper, but the government didn't keep it. And, if you can't attach it to a Social Security number, why are you making a Social Security payment? Is it me? I wonder, people. I just wonder. All right. I'm exasperated. Go ahead. What do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's take this chance to talk about our day jobs a little bit.
Okay, I like that.
We're actually fee-only financial planners. And what that means is that we help people plan their future, their finances, that type of thing. We also help them with their investments, but that is actually secondary. A lot of people think that financial planners only deal with finances, but if that is, or with investments. But if that is the case, then you probably need a new financial planner because there's so much more that we do. We look at insurance. We look at estate planning. We cover all aspects of your financial life, not just your investments. So
it's an interesting thing that you're going through this. I have in my hand something that will blend in with this very nicely. This is Clark Howard's look of how to find a fee-only financial planner and some of the reasons. First one, he says, is be sure to do your homework before hiring one because $17 billion a year is lost to dishonest financial advisors from retirement accounts. Care to address that issue with us?
Wow, that's crazy. One thing that we always preach is that you need to have a third-party custodian with a name that you recognize, like Schwab or TD, which is now going to be one company.
Schwab-D.
Or Fidelity or Vanguard or some other place that you can log on online, see your accounts, know exactly what's in them, know exactly what's happening with them. If you write a check to your financial advisor with your retirement money, don't expect to see it again.
Form ADV Part 2A, Understanding the Disclosure Brochure. There's a call, but I don't have a name. So, good morning, caller.
Good morning, answer. How you doing?
Real fine. How are you?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Good. Thank you. You too. You want to take a shot?
I know you need to remember this. Dick Tracy?
Yes. I feel like Dick Tracy when I take a call on my phone and I don't have the phone with me, so I'm using the wristwatch.
Right, yeah. Now, this is Lane, and Dick Tracy had a wrist radio.
Yep.
So, anyway, I'm saying 9%.
You're a little high.
I'm still high.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
It didn't come out all that badly, did it? Despite all the gloom and doom.
That's such fantastic news.
Isn't
it? That is just so great.
Yeah, and incidentally, the economy's booming, right?
Yeah. No, I've been reading it on the news, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Just can't be doing that well.
No. I'm sure we're just missing something, Lane. What can I say? All right, well, you were close. You got the bracket down a little bit. Everybody else has been helped. So
there you go.
We thank you very much.
Both.
Enjoy it. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thrill of the hunt, 7%.
Well, I'll tell you what. Since the answer is 6%, and I said I'd take it plus or minus 1, I just did some quick math, and that would indicate you win.
Okay. Can I make an arrangement with Alan off the air?
Absolutely.
Nope. Nope. I'm starting to feel real greedy. Yeah, I'm not totally shameless. And you can talk to him afterwards.
Hey, it's Christmas. Treat yourself well, too, I say.
Well, this would be for bonos, right?
That's right.
Can I do that? Would that be okay?
The guy who runs it is sitting across from me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, if I can talk to him. Yeah, I'm starting to feel real guilty.
It's perfectly okay.
Thank you.
Have a good appreciate one. It. Just a quick wrap-up there. If you remember all we went through with this thing, there was a time when the early returns were going in and people weren't getting as much back, so the media was making a big fuss out of it. I thought it was a tax cut, but your refunds are going down. Well, the refunds wound up being something like $28 less than the year before on average, but that was because they implemented new withholding tables, so everybody's day-to-day paychecks were bigger, and they got an equivalent refund. So the numbers came in. There's something like 16 or 17% that pay roughly the same, 6% that pay more, and everybody else got an actual cut. The people who got hurt were people in high tax states that have big state and local taxes for the most part.
Yeah, you know, I almost think that they should have, just from a pure marketing perspective, just left the tax tables the same for a year.
They should
let everyone get a big refund,
yep,
and then next year change them, because people don't appreciate $110 extra in their check every month. But when you get a $2,000 refund, that's a big deal.
Yeah, when you can't sell anything, as the Republicans can't, they never have been able to, they can't sell anything, then that would have been smart, except that the reducing of the tax withholding is a stimulative thing, and the economy took precedence over the sales job, apparently.
So I guess.
I could argue either way, but you're absolutely right about that. But the point is we're coming up on a couple of things. One of them is tax cuts round two. They keep talking about it, but nobody in D.C. actually gets anything done. The first thing we got to do with round two of tax cuts is to take the 10-year plan that it's going to expire. The personal stuff will expire in 2026. We need to make those permanent. If they didn't do anything else, I'd be satisfied with that, but they should do some other stuff too. Unfortunately, there's some idiots out there who are talking about another payroll tax cut, and I don't care who's saying it, and I will argue them, argue with them right to their face. That's the dumbest idea anybody ever had.
Terrible idea.
It takes away from Social Security. It's not a tax. It's a premium payment to your Social Security account. Cutting that is harmful to your long-term benefit as to the system, as means general taxes, when eventually they're going to have to start subsidizing it. So anyway, that's my luck. And I'm going to probably do my Christmas list for Congress next week. I do one every year. And it's not going to be pretty. But thank you to Ron Johnson, Senator from Wisconsin, who actually realized that people like Adam and Steve, who were running small businesses, if the law had gone through without his amendment to it, we would have been taken to the cleaners on
massive tax hike, no doubt about it.
But he figured it out, and he approached Trump personally, got his ear, and explained it to him. Trump agreed. They threw it in the law, and it got passed, and Ron Johnson gets the big shout-out from this program today. He's not only for that reason, he's been good at everything he did, but for that reason especially, thank you very much, Senator. We'll be back right after the break. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Fanway.
We had been talking about the selection process for a fee-only financial planner, such as us. And the first point, this comes from Clark Howard, who gives excellent advice along these lines and many other. The first one was doing your homework to show that these people like us have a third-party login site that has your money on it, and you can see it every day of your life and what happens to it. That's very important. Otherwise, it's going to get lost. The second one is knowing what a Form ADV Part 2A means.
Yeah, okay. which is something that is pretty boring if you've ever read through one. We are intimately familiar with our own. And what it is a document that goes on file with the governing body for our industry that states how you do business, what you are allowed to do, what you are not allowed to do, any disclosures, financial or otherwise, that you as a financial planner have to make. So any black marks on your record, it all gets summed up in this one document. Every legally operating financial planning firm should have one available to you at your request or online or through the...
You can link to ours through our website.
Right. Right. And then you can also get them through there's a website that FINRA, I think, mm-hmm. runs, that they're available. But the easiest place would be your planner's website. Just if you ever want to find out more about them, if there's anything that doesn't seem right, it should be found in the Form ADV.
Four things to look for: business practices, fees, conflicts of interest, and disciplinary information. All right. The third and final big thing that Clark says is check out the firm's code of ethics. Ours is included in our, is it in the ADV? I think it is. One of our major documents, anyway. And we were happy to send it to you. We incorporated the 2019 Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards Code of Ethics into our business systems and paperwork a year before it actually took effect. All that did was to certify to us that we were doing business the right way already. We had to make no changes whatsoever when we went on to the new Code of Ethics for the CFP Board. The other thing that I like, if you look National Association of Personal Financial, NAPFA.
NAPFA.
Yeah. NAPFA, in order to be a member of NAPFA, as we are, you have to show and prove, demonstrate that you are truly a fee-only planner. If you start looking for a planner through the NAPFA site, it will guarantee you that you're only looking at people who adhere to the same practices we do. So just different ways to find it. And ours is banwayfinancial.com. Real easy. We get more compliments on it than you probably believe. Adam takes care of it, and it's really a beautiful, well-done site. All right, let's talk about Medicare. This is a big deal now. You know, Medicare if you want it, Medicare free for all, Medicare this, Medicare that. And the implication, which is far from the truth, of course, the implication from the politicians is, of course, that Medicare is free. Well, you probably should know better. You probably even do know better, most of you. But maybe there's some people who don't understand it. So you can call it universal health care. You can call it single-payer health care. You can call it Medicare for all, or Medicare for all who want it. That's Mayor Pete. Or free health care, whatever catchphrase you want to use in your own campaign. I liken it to there being no free lunch. And lunch is a lot cheaper than health care, period. So first thing you got to do is straighten out the terms that they love to confuse. Health care is different than health insurance. Politicians and others love to blur that distinction to confuse the listener. You can sell a concept by making outlandish promises because people will just be waiting on every word to hear what they want to hear. Medicare is health insurance. A doctor visit or hospital stay is health care. Neither is free. Physicians and hospitals, they all want to get paid, strangely enough. If you want to know what you're already paying for Medicare, you may or may not know that. If you are over 65 and in Medicare, and you're not taking Social Security, you know precisely because they send you a bill every month or they debit your checking account every month. That's easy. But what if you're getting Social Security? You are paying into Medicare every month. If we ask people, what do you get in Medicare? 90%, I would say, give us their take-home pay. Isn't that what you would say, Adam? About 90%?
Yeah, most of the time.
If you go to your account at socialsecurity.gov and ssga.gov, if you don't have one, you can sign up very easily, but it'll give you your benefits breakdown. It's very interesting. You might find out that you're paying the minimum amount, which I think right now is $135.50, but that's going up 7%. But you might be paying more than that. It's based on your income from two full years ago. And the IRS sends that over to Social Security, who then will up your rate. That's it's almost ridiculously expensive if you make good money. That's the first thing I'd tell you. Now, Medicare A, Part A, is provided to most people at no charge. So if you want to talk about a little bit of, quote, free Medicare, but then you should go into the Social Security Department and get yourself an earnings statement and look at the far right column and see what you have paid into Medicare. You tell me how free that was. The list of earnings that go into Medicare as of George H.W. Bush got a lot higher because he took off the cap. It used to cap the earnings for Social Security and Medicare at the same. He lifted the cap on Medicare. So right now, you may have paid in an awful lot more money than you think. It goes up to $460.50 for Part B per month per person right now, and that all of them are going up 7%, so that one will be too. So Social Security loves it. Medicare loves it more, probably, when Social Security recipients get that money deducted from their Social Security payment because they don't get as much backlash. But implying that Medicare for all is the same thing as free Medicare for all is purely deception. I liken this to Adam's situation with his student loans. He's been paying down his student loans for how many years?
More than I would care to admit.
Yeah. And it's almost done. He could walk away right now with writing one check. It's so low. But he's paid off tens of thousands of dollars in student loans. Well, I take that same umbrage at them promising someone else Medicare because I went back and actually looked at how much I paid into the Medicare system. And for someone to get it free without spending those years and years and years of paying in as I did, that just doesn't sit well with me, period. And it never will. The drug coverage that's available as Part D will cost you extra. I personally carry a supplemental drug plan that costs extra. My cost of Medicare is astounding every year. If you think they're going to make me pay a big number and some kid pay nothing and not hear from me, think again. That's not going to happen. In order to be financially independent, you have to control your own expenses. You got to understand what you're paying. Medicare, being part of health insurance, which is part of health care expenses, are high. If you sit down, and we're getting into taxes right now, as I was saying, if you sit down and go back over every form of medical expense, from insurance to out-of-pocket, dental, drugs, the whole thing, add it up, I will promise you it will be one of your largest expenditures for the year. Anybody who tries to circumvent the cost of medical things in general is lying to you. It will bankrupt the country. And fortunately, little by little, they're getting caught right now. And just to wrap this up, they're estimating something like $53 trillion over 10 years. In 1965, the House Ways and Means Committee, who are the people that actually spend our money in taxes, they estimated the 1990 cost of Medicare to be $9 billion. 2 years later, they raised their estimate to $12 billion, a 33% increase for 1990. The bills came in and got paid in 1990. They were $67 billion, an increase of 458% from the highest estimate. So if we apply the common sanity test to this, should we believe that the estimates of Warren and Sanders are correct? Or do you think it might actually run into a lot more money than that? All I can say, people, is don't be duped by people who are selling you a pig and a poke. These people have to be stopped, or we're going to all go bankrupt. The country we live in will go bankrupt. It's just crazy. Don't let it happen. All right, we'll be back next week with our Christmas list. We'll see you then. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour.